show about women and girls making a difference and the men who support us. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI, staff, volunteers, board, or management. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart, one of the hosts of Every Woman, and we have many new people joining us. And in the studio today, we have Fiona Nowling on my left, not that you can see that. And on my right, we have Haley Stock, an intern from the American Friends Service Committee. And on her right is Ann Suellentrop, our guest today. She is a pediatric nurse and a board member of the Alliance for Nuclear
Accountability.
Thank you. And then on her right is Kristen Nolte, a mother who has lost a son recently due to cancer and perhaps directly related to nuclear waste in St. Louis, Missouri. And she'll be talking to us, too, and sharing experiences. And also will be speaking at All Souls Thursday night, July 20, at the movie, which is titled, can you give that, Anne?
Atomic Homefront.
Thank you. And then on the engineering board, we have Hope Benson, also a new intern and in study, and Una Nowling. And they're all over there ready to
We're ready to go as soon as I get my headphones untangled from my earrings.
Yeah. So I think we're set. How do we want to begin this? Anne called me or emailed me and suggested this idea for a show, which we're always on Every Woman looking for ideas for shows, especially as related to women and their families, and certainly everything in under creation pretty much relates to women and their families, and women need to be speaking out more vocally. And so Anne has a lot of experience with this with the Bannister plant?
Yes, there is a nuclear bomb parts plant in Kansas City. There has been since 1949. It makes 85% of the parts for nuclear weapons. And the old plant is due to be torn down and turned into some industrial use. That's pending, you know, the governor of Missouri's okay to transfer the title from the federal government to a private company called CenterPoint, and this could happen as early as the end of August this year. And the new plant is located across from the old Richards Gebauer Air Force Base on Highway 150.
And it is a sight to behold also. Also, I'm thinking there may be some concern about turning this into a public use facility at 95th and Bannister because of the cleanup issues or non-cleanup issues.
Yes, there have been some public hearings this spring, and I was also invited to a private meeting with the company and their geologists and to find out all the plans that they're having to how they're going to clean it up and to what extent they're going to clean it up. And then there was an open time period where you could submit comments, so I did that about some of my concerns.
And Kristen, how did you get involved with Anne?
My hometown is based, the film that's coming up is centered in my hometown. And someone reached out to me saying, there's an awful lot of people with cancer there. Something's going on. And at the time, my son was battling cancer. And obviously, I'd moved away from the St. Louis area here in Kansas City, and I thought, surely there can't be a lot of connection. I've been gone for a while, and I don't really know how this would have anything to do with anything. And that day that I found out about the connection, I was at the hospital with my son, and I met three other women from my hometown who I never knew. Three other women from St. Louis were there with children with cancer. And at that moment, red flags went up. And shortly after that, I was asked if someone could come film and talk to me about it, just hear what I had to say. And that's how we got involved with the film.
And the film is sort of a follow-up, kind of. There's another film that's going to be shown September 16th at the Tivoli, I believe at noon, called The Safe Side of the Fence, and that gives the background behind this situation in St. Louis. There was a company called Mallinckrodt, and it was a chemical processing company that took Belgian Congo uranium, which was the most highly radioactive uranium on Earth, still is, and it processed it, and it eventually ended up being in the bombs that were exploded over Japan. So this is Manhattan area waste, and it was downtown St. Louis, for God's sake, where it was at, and they dumped it at Lambert Airport, and it sat there, and then they dispersed it from there, illegally dumping it in 1973 in various locations in the North County area of St. Louis. Bridgeton, Weldon Springs, Coldwater Creek. Can you think of it? There's some others.
I understand there's also some in Edwardsville, Illinois, which is just across the river.
Oh, in Hazelwood.
In Hazelwood
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, how do they dump this? You don't just go dump a pile of it in a ditch, I assume.
Right. It turns out that the workers in the 1940s who were making this material for the bomb, it was very exciting for St. Louis because it was a prized job to be had. Mm-hmm. However, the workers didn't know that they were working with uranium. They weren't told what they were doing, and a large number of them developed disastrous cancers and died themselves. Then when the waste was all moved, they weren't really sure what to do with it. There was had been no laws placed around this. People weren't even really sure what would happen as the waste broke down. And they took barrels of it out to, I believe it was government property near the airport, the St. Louis airport, called Laddie Avenue. Much of it was just sludge and big piles of sludge that were just placed there. A lot of it was barrels leaking, things like that. And the rain washed much of it into the nearby creek, which was Coldwater Creek. Coldwater Creek runs north from that area to meet the Mississippi River. And the radioactive waste went all through my hometown. And as I grew up, I had four sisters in my family. Three of us had kids. All of us have had experience with children with medical issues, my son being the worst. But all the rest of our families were very healthy, except for my mom. But let me say, Florissant is a wonderful town, full of community. When I was growing up, it was named one of the safest places to live. Our high school was one of the best high schools in the country. Everybody walked everywhere. We played in that creek. Kids swam in the creek. A lot of the boys I knew ate crawdads from the creek. People watered their gardens from the creek, and it often flooded, and people thought that was great, that it was enriching their soil, but a lot of people's basements were filled with this water and things like that. And I think it was Anne that was sharing with me that a lot of people say, oh, I don't understand how that can, my children didn't grow up there, so why didn't they, you know, why is my son getting cancer? He didn't grow up there, but I did. And when a child is born, a woman has all of the eggs in her body that will be with her for the rest of her life. And once those eggs are contaminated, and it's random eggs, that's why all of my children don't have cancer, I believe, or why certain people are affected by it and others are not. So it's a very random kind of thing. And even the men who worked in the making the bomb, they all developed different types of cancers that took their lives. So they were having a hard time. It was around 2009 when some friends of mine were planning a reunion. And they started calling around, and a lot of these people who were 40 years old had cancer, had family members that have died of cancer, people under the age of 40. In fact, My son passed away in 2014, and in the 5 years prior to that, I lost, in the year that I lost my son, my mother and my son both died of cancer. In the 5 years prior to that, I lost my childhood sweetheart, his brother, two of our best friends, and one of my friend's daughters had, at a very young age, was diagnosed with thyroid cancer as a preteen. So these are just very odd cancers that are coming about. In fact, the cancer clusters are very unique. We have some very rare appendix cancers that just, they're very, very rare if they were found throughout the United States. But there's so many of them clustered in my hometown, as well as very rare health problems. There's an abnormal amount of conjoined twins that have been born there in the last 10 years. And those are just some small examples, but the government is kind of trying to look the other way, which is what I understand what they like to do. Now, they have, I have to say, they have been wonderful. The group that I have from Coldwater Creek that have been working on this, Janelle Roden, Kim Vizentine, Diane Schossenbach, they have been working very closely with the CDC and the FoodSRAP group, who are remediating the area. And
what's FoodSRAP?
I have here what it stands for.
The government always has all these acronyms.
Acronyms,
tons
that's right.
Of them.
Oh my goodness, and I can't find what it stands for. I have it written down.
What's the Army Corps of Engineers, right?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Thank
right.
you. Thank you, Anne.
I don't know what the exact letters stand for, but
I'm sorry. I can't find
and
it.
And what
in my
did you
right
what
now.
Did you say the word was?
FoodSRAP.
FoodSRAP?
FUSRAP. It's a remedial, the R stands for remedial, I think, of former material.
They're doing the cleanup.
And they're doing the cleanup.
Supposedly a good job.
So they're doing a wonderful job helping them clean up. However, they're not, you know, I'm not looking for anyone to claim blame, but they wouldn't be spending millions of dollars. Yeah.
Just by the way, Google told me FoodSRAP was formerly Utilized Sites Remedial Action Program.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's
quite the acronym.
That's a mouthful.
I just wanted to jump in here and to say that you're right to say that they're in conjunction with nuclear warhead manufacturing and nuclear plants. It's not a coincidence that you find these areas that are highly impacted by cancer. And I would say that, like, not only does nuclear weapons manufacturing threaten, you know, international relations, et cetera, but it definitely impacts us, like, here at home. And I wanted to point to the Bannister and Truce complex that Anne was mentioning. It is to my understanding that contamination is seen there as well.
Yes, it's probably contaminated into perpetuity. There is no cleaning parts of it up. It's just the way it is. Forever.
I see.
Pretty much, it's a hellhole of festering toxins, and it has PCBs and VOCs in a underground lagoon, and that is threatening the water that runs right next to it, the Indian Creek and the Little Blue River. And so they have pump and treat wells, and they say that they're going to dig up a lot of the contaminated earth and put some more pump and treat wells and, you know, make things better and before they replace it with regular dirt. And when we started this activism about the plant about 10 years ago, they would only claim there was about 300 toxins there. And the more we raised Cain about it and had hearings and town halls and so forth, now there's a list of over 2,000, about 2,400. There's some uranium that's been found there. While this company, CenterPoint, was just paid $20 million, I believe, over the last couple of years to really research what is the contamination there. And they found uranium, and they had to dig it up and send it to appropriate landfills. And it was outside the building. So that's a big question. Why was uranium outside in the yard?
Yeah, especially since the Bannister Complex, I think it was sponsored by Allied Signal. It was called the Bendix Kansas City plant, right? Why?
It's now run by Honeywell.
Exactly.
And it was always the same people that ran it. It was just how corporations, you know, coalesced.
I see. What was I going to say? It was a plant that wasn't supposed to be creating nuclear material. They were supposed to create the non-nuclear parts to the weapon, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that these materials, these radioactive materials, were still found on the site.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Right.
And I also have heard that they would do autopsies on bombs, that there was something wrong with them. So they would bring them in there and cut them open, and sometimes things would splatter out. So,
oh my goodness.
And nobody knew what it was.
But did the workers there know that they were working with hazardous materials? And then
no, they were not informed. Different departments were kept in the dark as what was going on in the other departments. They were not given protective equipment. They didn't have dosimeters for the most part. And now they're trying to get compensation under a new law. Well, it's not new now, but it came out in 2000 under Bill Clinton, the EEOICPA, the Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Act, and they're having to go through hoops just to prove that they were exposed and that their illnesses were caused by this, and then you get denied, and then they die.
A question that I do want to ask, Anne, if you don't mind, why are these plants in the Midwest? So speaking of Kansas City and St. Louis, why is the Midwest special?
It's not actually special. There are 8 major sites in the United States that together make up nuclear weapons production, but there's 300 feeder sites that also are involved. So you pretty much have this kind of problem just about anywhere you go. Mm. But there's 2 laboratories in California, and there's one in California, 2 in New Mexico. Of course, that's where the first bomb was exploded. The Trinity explosion was there. There's uranium mining in the Navajo Nation and the South Dakota Indian territories. They're still contaminated because they were never properly closed up, and that uranium is just blowing all around. In general, the Navajo Nation and the Indians in South Dakota have a 9 times higher cancer rate than the rest of the U.S. population. Pantex in Texas is where they put together the bomb and take it apart.
And she mentioned New Mexico and the Navajo Nation, and I think Fiona, Fiona's going to tell us who our guest is going to be at the bottom of the hour, hopefully.
Yes, we're going to be speaking with Grace Henio, who's a Navajo member of the Red Water Pond Road community, and they're going to be hosting a commemoration because of
the
loss.
Right today. And they will be also joined by people who were affected from the Trinity bomb blast. And this was July 16th, 1945, and the worst nuclear waste disaster in U.S. history occurred July 16th, which is weird, in 1979 on the Navajo Reservation near Rock Creek. And it was a bunch of uranium tailings were held back by a dam, which burst, and all of that flowed down and contaminated the River Puerco, the Rio Puerco. And much of it has not been cleaned up, and the people have suffered in both locations. So they're getting together today, and we're going to have this spokesperson from the Navajo Nation to talk more about that.
And just jumping back to the jobs and the people not knowing at Bannister, well, by the time they built the plant on Botts Road, the workers did know, but the unions, everybody was fighting for those jobs. So it just kind of goes to show how desperate we are for jobs, that we will actually go to work knowing that we are at peril.
Well, there's a lot of denial involved. And speaking of jobs, nuclear weapons jobs or military jobs in general, they are a very poor economic producer. They maybe produce one or two times, something like that, the economic effect. Whereas if we want to have a jobs program, how about doing some major work on infrastructure? That would produce seven times the jobs. I mean, or education or healthcare or housing or anything. But this is something that could potentially ruin civilization as we know it.
Or renewable energy.
Yeah. Right. Here we are in
Kansas. We have the technology for water, wind, and solar. And
perfect.
And it doesn't produce any waste.
We could convert these plants to something productive instead of destructive and wasteful.
The issue is, however, that what do you do with all of this nuclear waste? And, I mean, how do you handle it and take care of it so that it's not out there polluting? I mean, what's the life of nuclear waste, for example?
Oh, it's thousands, millions of years. I mean, plutonium is the worst, the most destructive thing that humans have ever made. And you go by half-lives, you know, and half, you know, what amount of time will half of it be gone? And it's forever. And Joanna Macy is a person who has a Buddhist background, and she has worked her whole life, I think, working about talking about poison fire, plutonium, the poison fire, and how humans must get together and contain it and warn future generations, you know, and always keep these sites kind of, you know, contained.
That's another portion of the film that's coming up. Atomic Homefront, which is produced by Rebecca Camissa, that will be showing next Thursday at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. The film itself is a tale of two cities, because my town was affected by the creek, but all the rest of the waste was eventually put into the Bridgeton landfill. And the Bridgeton landfill is having its own horrific issues right now. There's an underground fire going on that has not reached the majority of the atomic waste yet. And the surrounding neighborhoods are actually very terrified as to what happens when it reaches the bulk of the waste. Is it just become toxic to the air because of all of the fumes that are being put out from the waste itself? Could there be an explosion? They're really not certain. In fact, interviewed in the film is the local fire department, and they are very, very concerned. So even where the waste is being stored now, it's all very uncertain what is going to happen. We are a working Petri dish. When we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we dropped a bomb on ourselves. We still are touching all of it right now. And I don't think we really know what to do with it. I don't think there's a plan.
No, not since they canceled the plan for, was it Cheyenne Mountain that they were going to?
Oh, Yucca Mountain.
Yucca Mountain, thank you.
Yes, and there, as a representative in Congress, Representative Shimkus, who has just worked on a bill to revive Yucca Mountain, and the Nevadans are very, very opposed to this.
They don't want it in their backyard
no.
either.
No, nobody wants it, but it has to go somewhere.
And but if it travels, then it's on the roads, it's on the railways. It'll go through community after community, and it will be an endless cycle because there's continual waste being produced from nuclear.
That's right.
Not just the nuclear bombs but that are being made, but from nuclear energy.
Yep.
It's my understanding, and could you tell me, I could be fact-checked on this real quickly, but I was reading recently that I think that nuclear energy that's produced is a private industry and where they can make profit, but that the waste is handled by the government and it's their responsibility for placing it because it is such a public health safety issue. But right now the government doesn't have anywhere for it to go, so that we're paying the nuclear sites to hold on to that waste and store it to the tune of about $32 million a day.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Is what I found out in the last day or two. Until the government finds out where they're going to put it. So it not only is it a health issue, it's a financial crisis, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a lot of money.
The government does take control of nuclear waste from power plants as well as from some medical uses because of the plutonium content and the fears of nuclear proliferation. They want to make sure that it doesn't get out there and that someone doesn't start handling nuclear waste and then separating out the plutonium and selling it to someone for nefarious purposes. So that was the rationale behind the government being in charge of the waste. But unfortunately, what you said is exactly right. It's now, instead of being stored at one location, it's stored at 126 different nuclear power stations around the U.S., each one of which having to supply its own security, having to supply its own waste remediation. So while Yucca Mountain, it may not be the best possible solution, I wonder about how much longer the status quo of 126 some different sites is really going to be the best solution as well.
It's unsustainable. Nuclear power, nuclear war is unsustainable. We're killing ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for the medical usage, there's a very good argument that we're also saving lives. So there would be a cost-benefit thing there, because although it can, if handled badly, cause cancers and kill people, it can also be used for curing cancers.
I agree.
And detecting them. So that at least there's a cost-benefit analysis that you could do a risk analysis and say there may be some risks, but it will have this big benefit with it, and we need to manage and handle the waste and our processes better for...
Absolutely. Every time my son had a chemotherapy treatment, and he was treated every other week with five different drugs for a year, and that was just the first year. But every time they brought to me a whole pile of paperwork that I needed to sign that this could give him additional cancers, that the chemotherapy would give him additional cancers, the radiation treatments to his skull could give him additional problems, but the exposure was one big consideration that we had to think about every time that he had another treatment. And you're right, there is a benefit, but on a mass scale, it doesn't make any sense.
Yes, and that we already have plenty for use in medical facilities. When you're digging a hole, and it's getting deeper and deeper, first thing you need to do is stop digging.
Some of them, they have short half-lives, so they would still need to continue to be produced and things, but totally with you on the stop diggings.
Massive amounts right now, as Kristen said.
Well, there's different isotopes for different uses. Like, there's two different radioactive isotopes for iodine, and you use them a different way for treatment or for detection, and then at higher levels you use the other one for actually... to kill the thyroid cells and things like that. So some of them, you need them shorter half-life to be more vicious and angry at killing things. But if we're going to stop everything, we might stop and lose the ability to produce some of those shorter-lived
ones. Oh, no, we wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. But... the other thing is that cost-benefit analysis, it's really cool when you're just looking at it on paper and it's just statistics, but it's individual people's lives and individual people that you're playing with, and that often gets lost when people are doing that sort of calculation.
It looks like we have some bad news here. Evidently, the telephone number isn't correct and there's no cell service at the site.
Oh, well, that's too bad. We were hoping to have her on the radio, but maybe another time.
Well, tell me, what are they doing in New Mexico today? What is the event?
Well, there's a commemoration. It's pretty much all day, and they have activities for the children as well as the adults. And the people there are seeking to be recognized as downwinders and downstreamers. They are wanting to be compensated and, most of all, have medical assistance to deal with their cancers and so forth. And the people around the Trinity site, they were not warned at all. They were not, told that there was going to be this test. And they woke up in the early morning and looked out and saw a bright light, and then they saw, shortly after, some fallout, and it looked like snow, and they didn't know what it was. And they've had a lot of reproductive problems, and to the Hispanic culture, family is everything. And to not be able to reproduce and have children was considered shameful. And so for decades now, it's just been kind of underground and not talked about much. And so one of the organizers that got active is from that community, and ANA gave her an award this past year. Every year we go to Washington, D.C. and lobby Congress. And so Tina Cordova is her name. And she, along with another activist in the area, Joni Ahrens, they went to the community fund and got $35,000 grant to study the health impacts. And they did 1,000 interviews with people in the community. And they found out that it was a much larger area affected. And they have calculated that the fallout was blown up into the stratosphere and carried to a much wider area. And so they've compiled this into a study, a book, and booklet, and they took it to Congress, and the Congress offices told them, this is exactly what we need, now we can hold hearings. And so there's some hope in that area. And so the Navajo people are joining forces now and pressing for reparations also and for cleanup, because the area around Rock Creek has not been cleaned up by and large. And if you look at the Department of Energy's budget, those are the bomb makers. The National Nuclear Security Administration is a semi-autonomous body within that. The majority of their budget is for production of weapons. It is not for cleanup or remediation of any kind. And that has been cut. Whereas, of course, the budget over the next 30 years is $1 trillion. For increased production of nuclear weapons and new nuclear weapons, smaller nuclear weapons, more versatile weapons that would be more likely to be used. And, the government denies this, but, there's one that you can dial what height of burst you would have, so that way you could make it a bunker buster or spread it over a larger area. There's another one, the LRSO, long-range standoff missile, and it would be very provocative. It would be considered a first strike weapon. You could arm it with nuclear or not, and so the enemy would know, what they were facing. And you can, it'd be like a smart bomb.
Can I add something?
Sure.
I think that one thing I wanted to add was, I've been watching these videos with Michael Sandel, and he's giving lectures on the concepts and the faults and also the benefits of utilitarianism, and they're very interesting. And I think that utilitarianism, I don't totally agree with it, but I think that the concepts of it has something to do with this situation involving nuclear bombs. That's basically it.
And that's from our youngest member, who is amazing in my estimation for a 14-year-old, are you?
Yeah.
That you're paying attention, because I certainly wasn't at that age.
Absolutely.
One of my questions would be, what do we do with the 5,000, 7,000 nuclear weapons that we do have currently? Do we pile them up someplace and say, oh, these are no good anymore because we need new ones? Or do we need new ones because the companies that manufacture them need something to do and they've just manufactured themselves out of a job?
The bombs themselves, I'm not certain about. But the nuclear waste has proven to be valuable to many companies because they can continue to draw materials out of it and use the chemicals for other things. Sometimes before it's buried or put away before it's all used up, And sometimes they've extracted as much as they can. We're not certain what that case is at the Bridgeton landfill in St. Louis. But, you know, that does bring to mind another point, is that as these chemicals break down, they create daughter isotopes. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Not only do we not know how all the chemicals that were in there work together or how they affect one another and how those things will affect us once they're all combined, but then all those daughter isotopes, it seems to me, like I said, that 5 years before my son passed away was especially the city where I'm from in Florissant, Missouri, was mushroomed with cancers. And it seems to me that maybe over time, all that breakdown of those chemicals was affecting people for it to mushroom at that one time. So I wonder to myself, as it continues to break down, as these things continue to break down, what will happen in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years? And again, we don't know the answer to that. So I imagine with the bombs that are left, I can imagine there being great usage for extracting some of the chemicals out, but even the waste is very dangerous.
Yeah, your point about the daughter elements is really good, because it's not, even if you ignore the radioactivity from these items, they're all heavy metals, and heavy metals are toxic to the body anyway, just like the issues with mercury. That's not because of radiation. It's just a nasty chemical to be ingested into the body. So even without the radiation effect, with this stuff being in the town water supply and in people's yards and food, you're going to be having issues that will affect people anyway.
Mm-hmm. So we're really grateful that the Army Corps of Engineers has stepped in to the Florissant area. And they're working together with the families that have tried to coalesce. They've got amazing, and you'll see in the film next Thursday, they've got amazing maps of the cancer clusters. They've got incredible maps of what the CDC is planning to do as far as remediation and where the safer areas are and what the more toxic areas are. The Bridgeton landfill people, I understand their concern, although I haven't followed it quite as closely. I think that the people immediately surrounding it are looking to be bought out by the government, and my heart goes out to them. I can't blame them. I would want to be too. It just strikes me that I understand in the 40s they didn't know what they were dealing with, or maybe the 50s or 60s or 70s. But as they continued to build closer and closer to these sites, it just baffles the mind. Yeah. So, as to your question about the bombs, that's still a really good question.
Yeah, some of them they might be able to reuse it for payload for the newer, tinier ones, the smarter ones, but...
Absolutely.
Then again, they're shipping stuff all over the place for doing that, too.
Right.
And this is a problem, too, that has not just affected the United States, but it's affected every single nuclear nation on the planet. And in some respects, you know, this has become a global problem. The nuclear testing occurred globally during a 5 to 6 decade period, and you have... The former Soviet republics have many areas that are heavily contaminated as a result of both nuclear testing and nuclear waste disposal. So even though the problem is at least somewhat understandable here in the United States, there are countries where they literally have lost track of large amounts of this radioactive waste. They're basically going to find it on accident someday, and then who knows what happens.
You can imagine that after losing my son, I was very concerned about the situation in Coldwater Creek. And I have, you know, it's one of the funny things about cancer when children are diagnosed, and I should preface this by saying the hospitals are amazing at dealing with this. Children's Mercy in Kansas City and KU Med in Kansas City hold your hand the whole way through. They are wonderful at compassion and the top of the line of medicine. But nobody comes to you and says, I understand you have two more children at home. let's find out how this happened so it doesn't happen to them. That doesn't happen. Or no one gives you a sheet of paper that says, here's 10 sheets with a questionnaire. Please fill this out if you grew up near any nuclear waste or if you ingested any herbicides or chemicals. None of that happens. So, you know, I know that my son's cancer was genetic but not hereditary. And what that means is two chromosomes traded places with each other. In Ewing's sarcoma, which is what he had, 11 and 22 trade places with each other, but no one knows why. They know that one of the causes can be ionizing radiation, which is nuclear material. And so when I started looking around, okay, maybe this is it, because no one could point to anything else to help. And I thought, where do I take my kids so that they're not near any nuclear waste? I'm going to look around. When you start looking on the map, there's nuclear weaponry, there's nuclear energy all over the United States. And I thought, okay, well, let's check South America. Or, well, let's check Europe. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Because things are shipped around without anybody's knowledge, it's everywhere.
And even without it being shipped around, I grew up in the UK, and I was living there when Chernobyl happened. Mm. And, of course, it rained over large portions of Scotland and North Wales. And some of the countries in Europe issued school children with iodine tablets so that if they got any radioactive iodine, the odds of it getting taken up by their thyroids was much lower. The UK didn't. Mm. And it's only like a couple of years ago that they released the sheep from North Wales to be used for meat now, the levels of contamination from that rain.
Right?
They could sell the fleece because that wasn't going to be eaten and ingested, and it's an ongoing item. But for years they were giving out subsidies to farmers to keep the sheep farms alive because of possibility of contamination from that rainfall.
Wow.
And the schools that I went to, we actually had, we were having chemistry class straight after it happened and after the rain. And we'd just been doing about radioactivity, and we'd done our regular background radiation level. And the teachers were all hopping up and down and excited because of how much above the normal background level it was and how detectable it was.
So that you could see?
Yes, it was very detectable, the difference.
Mm.
Yeah. And we actually had water from North Wales in Birmingham. That was where the water supply for Birmingham came from. So that would have been in the water supply that we would have drank, that we would have known nothing about what might have been in there or what time it went through.
Right.
And you suspect that this might be some of the reasons behind your thyroid issues.
Yeah, I do. Of course, I have no proof, and it's a statistic of one, but...
Right.
Yeah. Anecdotal evidence.
Listening to you all talk, it's like mystifying as to why the people in the power positions do not look at this and do something about it. It could be changed. Why is that? Who does it suit? Who does it please? Who makes the money? I guess this is a situation, follow the money. And we do know that the corporations do pretty much own our politicians, and those are the people we elect that are supposed to protect us, I think, or I used to think.
The new energies are elbowing their way into getting a piece at the place at the table, and they're really not able to do it, I don't think so. That doesn't speak to the nuclear weaponry, but nuclear energy is a big part of it as well. And we have the technology for wind, water, and solar now. And there are people who go to great lengths to show how we can cover the grid with it. It just needs to be done.
But there are also issues with that. Mining some of the minerals that they need for those batteries, the lithium production is horrific.
I think on the front end, you're right, that there are still some dangers, but it puts out no waste. And the waste, I think, is huge.
Okay. Thank you guys for your contributions. Right now we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with you soon.
Join Jaws of Justice Radio at 9 a.m. Monday when representatives of Empower Missouri and Missouri Cure discuss a meeting they had with the new director of the Missouri Department of Corrections. And then Michael Liamata, new director of Footprints, an addiction recovery program in Midtown. That's Jaws of Justice Radio at 9 a.m. Monday, right after Democracy Now!
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson. Join me on Cowtown Conversations, where we will discuss matters that impact your life as a resident of the Kansas City metropolitan area, Thursday mornings, right after Democracy Now! On the next episode, our guest will be Teresa Garza with Rent-A-Made America, discussing how we can make affordable energy efficiencies to our home.
This is Sharon Lockhart with Every Woman. We're on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City. And you just heard from Hope Vinson, our brand new engineering student over there with Una Nowling, Fiona on my left, and Haley Stock, and our two guests, Ann Swellentrop and Kristen Nolte. And we've been talking about the effects of nuclear waste and the impact it has on women and their families. And I'm not sure that there are any solutions. I think maybe education, making more people aware, and that's why we're on the radio talking today. There's also going to be a film at All Souls on Thursday.
Yes. And it's open to the public. Everyone's welcome. And it's going to be about the effects of what people are dealing with in St. Louis. Not so much about the history and the background of how it happened, which is the other side of the fence, is the safe side of the fence. I'm sorry.
This kind of picks up where that left off. Yeah.
And I'd like to invite listeners to call in if you have any comments you'd like to make, anything to add. That phone number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534, and join the conversation. So again, Thursday night, July 20, 7 p.m. at All Souls for...
That's right. The film is called Atomic Homefront, and it lasts about 96 minutes. And then we'll have a discussion immediately following. And I just wanted to say again that, I can't be certain that this is the way that my son got cancer. But this is the type of cancer that ionizing radiation produces. And if you've ever been to the cancer ward for children... I don't like to scare people, and I don't like to worry people who are newly developed with cancer. But to hear children crying and pleading not to be treated is very sobering. And this is what nuclear waste does. And we need to be very careful going forward what we do. When we know better, we can do better, and we should do better.
And warnings about things as well, what they do, now we know more. When I was growing up, some friends of mine, their mother developed cancer, and they gave her a radium implant to treat it, and they told her not to spend too much time around her kids because they were growing and developing cells are more liable for damage from radiation. And they never even thought of saying, and if you spend a lot of time around anyone that's an adult, it could still have an issue. And unfortunately, she died from her cancer. And then 6 months or so later, her husband was still really tired and run down. And the doctor's like, that's not right. That's not just from grieving and from being tired. And it turned out it had given him leukemia from her radium treatment that didn't even save her. And so they lost their father as well.
Oh, my. Yeah, it affects whole families. In fact, one of the moms who's leading the charge in Florissant was saying that she wasn't certain of the connection, of how everyone was getting this. And if she could just find three families that weren't affected, three families that didn't have these rare, unusual cancers, that she would just back off. And she still hasn't been able to find three families that have grown up there. that have not had that problem. It's a fascinating film. The producer, Rebecca Camessa, is going to be there at the film on Thursday as well. So she's coming into Kansas City just for that. So she'll be there to answer questions.
It must be horrible living there, because if you're an avid gardener and you've always taken pride in growing your own vegetables and doing organic food, now you know anything you bring in from your garden could be what's killing you.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I racked my brain for years trying to think, what did I do to my kids? I was a stay-at-home mom. We were vegetarians for 7 years. I tried to be with them every moment. I was probably a helicopter parent. And, you think you're doing the right thing, and it swoops in on you.
So. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't matter what you do. Sometimes it seems like things really just are out to get you, no matter what.
Yeah, it's there.
Something that I would like to mention is currently there's a project going on. What is it called? It's Hardesty and Independent Avenue. It's the Hardesty Federal Complex, and it's where this wasn't where nuclear manufacturing was happening, but it was where ammunition was manufactured and produced here in Kansas City. And currently right now that site has been abandoned for quite a while, but there is a organization, a nonprofit from New York called Asian Americans for Equality, that actually have a project proposal to completely reconstruct the site. Your conversation about the food that we eat, the water that we drink. This is an instance in Kansas City where you have this company that is trying to turn this 20 acres of this complex into a housing neighborhood and urban farms. In order to, start that project, they're actually having to do cleanup, and it's actually they're having to dig 60 feet of soil in order to even imagine putting vegetables.
I can't imagine that they think that putting vegetables in is a good idea, even after remediating it, Yeah, that's tough. And you don't want to see any community become a wasteland where people all have to leave. And I think it's wonderful that they're working, that the government is stepping in and helping and all that. But it seems to me when there's situations like that where there's known chemical issues, we should tread lightly.
Perhaps they're sacrificial vegetables at some remediation sites. No, really, they will deliberately plant vegetables and plants that are designed to bioaccumulate and suck up the waste, and then they throw away like the first 20 or 30 crops or so forth. But I'm just looking on the bright side of things.
But if they're taking out, they're digging down 60 feet and hauling that soil away, is that...
Where? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, where are they hauling that soil? And you would sort of think that anything would go down, not up through the soil. I mean, gravity seeming to be a force that we can depend on usually, if we're not in outer space anyway. So I don't know.
Soil gets mixed by the living creatures in it, worms and
so
insects and things.
They can natural forces.
Yes, yeah.
But it's important to note that the communities that these nuclear plants affect, and not even just nuclear plants, but what this military industrial complex is having an effect on our communities, is they're predominantly Black and Brown communities. You were mentioning earlier, indigenous communities, right? Not only is Troost the site of the Bendix Kansas City power plant, but this Hardesty Federal Complex is a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood. You know what I mean? So I don't believe that those are coincidences.
You're absolutely right. Those are not coincidences. And we haven't had any callers yet. I'm totally surprised. And we are coming close to running out of time here. We have about 7 minutes to go, and probably two more minutes to talk. So let's figure out what's important.
There are
important.
Some things that could be mentioned that are hopeful. The UN just passed a ban on nuclear weapons, and this is a ban treaty that the countries will start signing in September, and then they have to take them to their own countries to ratify. But 122 countries voted to ban this. And so it's like putting a stain on nuclear weapons. No, they're not good. You know, they're illegal.
Why am I guessing that the U.S. was not one of the ones that voted to ban them?
None of the nuclear states were participating. But also locally, there is new energy and new people getting involved about the Bannister Federal Complex. There's a group that was on, or a person anyway, that was on Monday night on KKFI that was talking about a group, the Bannister Federal Complex water treatment or water stream protectors of some sort. And so these people are finding each other and starting to coalesce and work on these issues.
I think the internet is probably a great source of help for that, because you can find other people that have got experience and have gone through similar things, and they can connect you to resources and tell you how to research these things and get things kicked off faster and cheaper.
Which brings up the subject of something that is being called net neutrality. KKFI, there's a Friends of Community Media forum down the hall right now. There is a move to slow down the line to the little people like us and give it to the big corporations. So anyone that's interested should probably Google the FCC and the word net neutrality, hook up with freepress.net, and find out more information. There's just an endless struggle for us to stay on top of what would happen to us, or what is happening to us, beyond comprehension of good sense. And we're out of here. Stay tuned. I was going to give it to Hope, but I won't give it to Hope to take away, to stay tuned for Urban Connection with Donna Wolf and MC Richardson with Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. And next week, Una and Fiona will be back again with me, I guess, and Haley and Hope also, and whoever else might show up.
And thank you for our guests today.
Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. We hope to see people on Thursday. Thanks.
Their power. I come from women who gave up their name, and I come from women who know nothing ever stays the same. I come from women tender as roses. I come from women strong as stone, and I come from women who know no one ever walks alone. Women of wisdom, women of tears, women who stood and embraced their fears, women of struggle, women not free, women who slept awake, and I come from women who guarded the fires for children's sake. I come from women who vowed to do better. I come from women tall and strong, and I come from women who taught me I must always sing my song. Women of wisdom, women of tears, women who stood and embraced their fears, women of struggle, tender as roses. I come from women strong as stone, and I come